And I'm Allie.
And it's
About Time for True Crime.
Hey.
Hi, how are you?
Oh, just lovely. And yourself?
I'm doing fabulous. It's a Tuesday. We're recording.
It's nighttime.
I'm in sweats.
I'm in my fat pants.
I got kitty cuddles.
You did.
I did. Happy March, almost April.
Happy weather slightly getting warmer, question mark? Maybe.
We are in the Northeast, so like last week, weather was nuts. It was like 60 and then 30 and then 50 and then we had snow maybe. And like,
yeah, it's been a ride here in the Northeast. And I know it's so cliche. We talk about the weather all the time, but it has such an impact on my mood. And I think because in New England, it changes so often that like it, I don't know, man.
No, totally. It's a lot. Plus, like, it impacts everything you do. And especially, I don't know, maybe this is just the big old seasonal affect disorder or the big sad, if you will. But especially in spring, it matters. You know what I mean? Like, we're all trying to get through the end of winter. Just get me some sunlight.
There really is that lull. And there's science that proves when you don't have sunlight, your mood and how you feel and cortisol and everything, like you're more stressed, you're not the inability to relax, to be happy. So
why do you think the Pacific Northwest has so many fucking serial killers?
Hoa hoa season over there always,
every day is a hoa hoa. And if it's sunlight out, well then this is the skin of a killer, Bella.
She's like, you're beautiful. I told you, I watched that a few months ago, the first Twilight movie, and I remember growing up, like, I think I either had or went to a birthday party to, like, go see that in the theaters.
Yes.
I think I went to it. And I thought it was so good. I read all the books when I was a kid, and then you watch it, like, in your 20s, and you're like, what the fuck? And you know the actors were in their 20s when they filmed this, and I was like, none of you said anything.
No, literally.
Like, not one of you spoke up and was like, I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that. She wouldn't say that, damn it. Bella was really likable in the movie, in the books.
Okay.
Okay.
Oh my gosh.
Bella was really likable in the books.
It's
the movies,
so true.
They were hit or miss. It really depended. And it's not a Kristen Stewart thing. It was like the lines they gave her.
No, it was not great.
Ma'am, I have a bone to pick.
I have an even bigger bone to pick. I didn't get the spinoff I want. Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. They came out with new books from Edward's perspective. What about Charlie? We all know he's the star of the show.
Big Daddy Charlie?
Oh, yes.
Right?
Oh, my gosh.
Where's his origin story?
I know. Give it all to
him.
Me.
Him and the...
Him being like, love you, Belle.
Mm-hmm. But him
and then he goes to bed and I'm like, him and his friend. Love her.
Him and his friend from the reservation.
Yes.
Jacob's dad.
Yeah.
Okay. I forget his name. It's completely lost on
Big
me.
Big Poppy.
Sure. Him. I love the actor that played him.
Yes.
If we had a movie about them in their like teenage years. And then Charlie really knew the whole time.
Even better.
Stephanie Myers, where you at?
Where? And where's our cut? And also, where's Charlie?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Anyway.
All that to say, hey.
Hey.
How are you guys?
Update for me that nobody was asking for.
I am.
I finally got my hair done.
Yes.
My grays were making themselves known.
And I know what you guys are thinking. Abby, Allie, Albie, if you will. Aren't you the ripe young age of in your 20s? Yes.
The answer is yes.
Simply what our job line of work will do to you. Yeah.
Definitely what the line of work will do to you. However, my grays are gone.
Yeah, they are.
I have naturally like very dark brown hair.
Yeah.
So now I'm all consistent now. And I really have no excuse because my mother-in-law does hair and she does an excellent job with mine. And so I don't know why I don't just go more often, but it's just like the last thing I ever want to go do is see myself with that black cape around. And I'm like, I've never looked uglier in my life.
And you're like, and, hey, M-I-L.
Right? I'm like, wow, I hate everything about that visual. And I got a haircut, which I was happy about.
Yes.
And when I was younger, I had really like short, cute little hair, yeah, you know, little shoulder length. But now if I did that, I'd look like Lord Farquaad.
Well.
So I can't do that.
But he marries a...
No.
But he almost marries a princess.
Yeah. And she didn't choose him. And then my other option is if I don't go in the Farquaad realm of like straight hair and I let it be a little bit curlier, then I look like the kid from The Orphan.
Well, who none doesn't of, love a little mystery?
None of these are good. None of these are good. So I will have long hair until I can't.
For anyone who is new, Allie is 2 feet tall.
I am so not.
Okay, she's a whole 3 feet tall.
I'm 5 feet tall.
Whatever you say.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm rounding up. I'm 5 feet tall.
Yes.
And in my heels that I wear every day, I'm like 5'2". Because yeah. I can't really wear more heels than that or I'll fall.
In your heels, you're only like 5 inches shorter than me.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yes. When Abby and I hang out and she has like any kind of sneakers on and I have nothing on, I look like the kid that she got stuck having to bring with her because she was babysitting. And it was like, I guess you're coming with me. I got to go run errands. Like yeah. I look yes, ridiculous. Yes, we can stop
at Justice on the way home. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Get a little cake pop.
So that's my life.
My life, let's see. I don't know that there's a lot of updates right now. I am making it through the spring. Mr. Abel Dabelson is turning a big milestone birthday soon, so that's been exciting.
Mr. Abel Dabelson.
He's getting ready to go to music camp. It's so cute.
I love that so much.
I'm like, yes, go to camp. This one time at band camp.
He's literally going to band camp.
Yes. With like one of his favorite bass players. It's so cute.
Like a celebrity or like a local celebrity to him?
No, like, I mean, Victor Wooten has done a bunch of different bass stuff, mm-hmm. but he does like a full range of camps.
That's so cool.
It's very fun.
Good for him.
Yes. And I know he's met him once or twice before, so it should be very fun.
Ooh.
So I'm excited for him. And I'm like, I want to hear all my dad's stories from camp.
I want to hear all his stories from camp. How the
turntables, you know?
Right.
And let's see. I don't know. That's really it. I am so excited, so deeply excited for the days to get longer. Like for it to be light past 6 o'clock.
For it to warm up a little bit here. And you don't have to defrost your car before you get in.
True.
All that good.
I've been pulling a Fergie. And by that, I mean, I've been in the gym working on my fitness.
Oh, they're going to say doing a terrible rendition of the national anthem.
No.
Not that?
No, I've been told I should cut the singing. So.
Oh, no.
But it's okay. I wouldn't have tried to do whatever that piece of art was.
Art is very loose there.
It's interpretive. I just haven't seen it in that case. But you know what? Art's subjective. So
that it must be, because objectively it was really bad. Anyway.
Oh!
Love Fergie, but not that.
Yes. I've been up in the gym working on my fitness with a witness. Ooh, woo! So,
correct.
That's been good. It's been fun. Although I will say it's been a while since I've like frequented a gym,
mm-hmm.
as you may imagine from everyone listening to me talk anytime period.
Why?
I'm just not a gym bro. I'm not gym bro coded, but it's been a minute.
Okay.
And it's very fun to people watch in the gym.
Oh, see, I can't go to the gym because I'm like, oh my God, I'm the thing that people are watching. People are people watching and I'm the people.
Oh,
I'm
the no, people. No, you're not the people. Listen, there are people to people watch. That ain't you. Okay. Last time I was there that I was like, what the fuck is happening? There was a guy in front of me on the treadmill with his girlfriend ? Mm-hmm. And they were walking on two treadmills right next to each other, mm-hmm. on like the steepest incline it can go backwards. And I was like, why is any of this happening? And so of course they're right in front of me. We're just
so you're like looking at eyes.
No! I'm walking forward and they're walking backwards. And then I ran into my old fucking boss and I was like, I look disgusting. Why?
That's my wife, and you look beautiful, so stop it.
I looked like a bully from fucking Hey Arnold, okay? Like, it wasn't great.
And you rocked that shit. That's my bully from
Hey Arnold. And I said, hey, football head, at my old boss.
Oh, no.
No. But that's been a very fun people watching time for me. There's lots of characters. My roommate started going to a gym, not the same one. And it's like a chain called The Zoo.
Mm-hmm.
But everyone that goes there, I swear, is a fucking animal.
Oh, no.
And so now when she comes back, I'm like, how are the animals?
At the zoo?
At the zoo. And like, the things she tells me that she sees are so far beyond what I could imagine in my little Planet Fitness bubble. Okay.
Dollar down, 10 a month.
Right? She's had people walking in Crocs at the gym. Not in sport mode.
Not sport mode?
Not in sport mode.
That doesn't even add up.
No. That math ain't mathin'.
Mm-mm.
Anyway, it's been beautiful. At one point, I think she said someone was like fully in a button-down shirt, like working out.
I mean, not my preferred attire.
No, it's not breathable.
But you know what? You know what?
You probably
if they're doing good. It, if they're doing it, they're doing it.
I know. It's very Hozier-coded. But anyway, all of that to say, I did have one little true crime thing that I thought you all would like.
Ooh.
Speaking of my roommate, beautiful, wonderful darling,
we love her.
Love her so much. Good friend of the pod. We have been watching all of the Oscar nominated movies.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's Oscars. I'm really bad at all of the awards, but you know what I mean. All the movies. One of them is called The Anatomy of a Fall.
A Fall?
Yes. The Anatomy of a Fall. It's so good. It's this English/French kind of procedural film about a British woman whose husband dies. And the only person around when it happens is her blind son.
Oh.
And so it's super interesting. It's very good. Obviously, you're here, so I think you guys would like it. But it's very true crimey. There's a lot of really beautiful French spoken. And the scenery is fucking beautiful.
Is it a new movie?
Yes.
Not that I have cable, but I haven't seen commercials on it.
It came out in 2023. I know, I haven't either, but I feel like that's always the case with Oscar nominated movies. It's like I've heard of one by the time the awards come around, and I'm like, where the fuck were the rest of these good films?
I think we're just so saturated with so many TV shows, movies, yeah, one-offs, docuseries that it's like you can't keep up. So if it's good, it's good.
Yeah. So I thought I'd let you guys know, because I mean, it is up for an award. I liked it.
Okay.
You can rent it on Amazon pretty cheap. Or if you don't want to rent on Amazon, you can go to YouTube, because I'm sure Jeff Bezos has enough money. So, but that is kind of all I have before I want to jump into today.
Okay, jump into it. So, skippers, stop skipping.
Yoo-hoo, pod's on.
Pod's on.
Come on. All right, hey.
Hey.
Hi. Hello. Welcome. Or welcome back to your favorite true crime podcast about time for true crime.
Hey.
Hi. You guys are so sweet. You didn't have to, but you did. So thanks.
Really? Thank you.
Just as a reminder, up at the top to give us a follow, like, review, subscribe, all that good. Download a few episodes wherever you are, whether that's
good.
Apple or Spotify. If you're on Spotify and you don't know about this feature, you can scroll down and there's always a Q&A on what you thought. And sometimes we have a fun little poll there. So worth taking a look. And if you're on Apple and you leave us a little review, we love it. And we read them and we cherish them like Patrick's little photo of SpongeBob in his box. And we just open them and giggle and we close them and it's for us.
That, and then sometimes we'll share them.
Yes. If you guys want it to be shared, which you could also let us know on Instagram. But that's linked below, baby. We'll get there.
That's linked below, baby.
So today, I want to talk to you about a case that happened in the 1990s right outside of Washington, D.C.
Okay.
This went cold and unsolved for over 20 years.
Oh, I hate that.
There's plenty to talk about here, so I do just want to jump in pretty quick. But before I do, I'm going to give you a few of my sources, which we always do at the top. These are always linked below, but they are never exclusive. The list is usually far more reaching than whatever we say up at the top. But just for your peace of mind, today I used a Dateline NBC podcast episode called Behind the Closet Door, The Sun, NBC News, Oxygen, The Washington Post, and so many more you're welcome to check out if you want.
Heckers, yeah.
So today there's murder, but there's no other particular like content warning other than we do talk about a previous charge that can be a little triggering, but that's way later on and it's not in depth. So hopefully nothing too crazy today. So let me take you back to the year of 1998. We're going to Virginia, and specifically Arlington, Virginia, right outside of Washington, D.C. Andrea Sincotta, a 52-year-old librarian, had a rare day off. Andrea was in her Colonial Village apartment off of North Road Street, which I don't know North that any of that means anything.
Road Street? That's funny.
Yeah, right? And Andrea had taken the day off again. She like never did this. She was a librarian. She loved her job. She actually had put herself through librarian school when her son was little. And so that's like some of his first memories of her, which is really cute.
Aww.
But she loved it so much. Like it was really a passion of hers. So she never took a day off, partially because like she got that good work ethic, but also she just loved her job. So to take a day off was rare and she was going to have fun with it. She had plans to go on a date that night with her fiance.
Ooh.
She was gonna go for a lunch date with a friend. She had like the whole day planned
out. Living the dream.
She had access to a pool in her community that she used pretty constantly. Andy, as her friends called her. Andy loved swimming. She tried to swim every single day. According to her son, Kevin, she loved swimming because it was a full body workout and it was relaxing, but also because she always said that she felt amazing when it was done. So after Andy went swimming for the morning, she was supposed to go to lunch with her friend at 1, right? And this is like kind of where we leave when her fiance, Chris, gets back. So let me be honest with you here. Her fiance's name was James Christopher Johnson, but he went by Chris, so we'll call him Chris. And the two had been dating for 10 years.
Oh.
So they'd been together for a good long time. And I don't know, they just seemed so happy. Like the whole dynamic they had was very sweet. It was like a very good, strong partnership. So she did a lot and he was very supportive. Obviously, Andy has her son, Kevin, and Kevin, at this point in time, so in 1998, Kevin's like 24. So he was a teenager when Chris and Andy got together. And Kevin's like first big memory with Chris was learning to drive, which is very cute.
Good.
But they just had like a very peaceful, relaxed relationship. And Chris really let Andy take the reins on a lot. Obviously, like she was the primary parent, so he was supportive in that way. But also, I think when they first lived together, he moved in with her and then they moved somewhere else together. So at first it was kind of like her domain that he was entering. So he was just kind of a passive guy in general, but he was very supportive.
And that's really important too, that he didn't make waves and valued that she's a mom first and her son's going to come first. And then he played a role in his life and it was a positive one.
Yeah, it's really cute. Kevin talks about him as like half stepdad, half older brother, which I don't know, especially for someone coming into your life that late.
Yeah.
Into your development is like kind of a nice middle ground, I guess.
Like he didn't come in and start barking orders at you. We kind of knew his place, came in and was just there as a resource for you.
Yeah, he's like, I'm here for what you need, dude.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So I love this dynamic. I think it's really good, which is where we pick up on August 21st, 1998. And it could have been August 22nd. I saw that in one source, but every other source I saw said the 21st. So I'm going to go with that.
All right.
But it was around 1 a.m. So actually, that might have been where August 22nd came from. But it was around 1 a.m. when Chris made a phone call to 911 where he sounded distressed, but not panicked.
Okay.
He said, hey, listen, I was supposed to go out on a date with my fiance tonight, and when I got home, she wasn't there, but neither was her car or her purse, so I just thought she was out. And then the night went on, and I thought, like, it was kind of weird that she was missing. We had plans, but I don't think she's missing anymore. I think she's dead.
Oh, that's different. That's a jump.
And 911 was like, yeah, why the fuck? And he was like, well, I looked in our closet and she's on the ground and I can't find a pulse.
What? I'm sorry, what?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
stressed but not panicked.
Yes.
Okay.
And so the call was weird, but
you didn't open with that. You didn't say, I just found my fiance in a closet in the house and she's not breathing. It's so at first, so I woke up.
So I thought she was missing.
I had a glass of apple juice, as one does.
As you do. I sorted my socks. And then when I went to put them away, I just saw well, that's a body that looks like my wife.
Like, that's just so...
No, it was a very odd call. And it was very, calm in urgency, I guess. Even though you could tell something was wrong. Like, he wasn't good. But he wasn't like, oh my God, I need an officer, right this minute. Come here, come here.
At the same time, though, I can't imagine what it was like to be him in that moment. And I don't know what I would do. I tend to panic.
Yep.
So I can't imagine that I'd be calm, but some people can just be very matter of fact in the mm-hmm. moment. Whereas I feel like I would be like, I need an ambulance right now. Right now I need an ambulance. Even if Stat. I knew, you don't want to accept it. You don't want to know it. You don't.
Yeah.
You just, someone, I need medical somebody attention, come help. Stat.
Yeah.
Somebody come help. Not. So at first I thought this, then I thought this, then I got to this point.
And maybe she's dead? Question mark.
And she's a little cold. So
what do I do?
Could you send something? You know, that's, I don't know. I don't want to judge something I can't understand.
Right. Well, and I think that honestly, hold on to that, because that's a big part of this case, is people assuming that his reaction means different things.
Mm-hmm.
So it's strange. Don't get me wrong. It's definitely not what I would expect or how I would anticipate I would react in that situation.
Yeah.
But it's not necessarily anything, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Especially if it's 1 a.m., you're kind of groggy. You wake up in the middle of the night, she's still not home. And then you're she's home.
Yeah.
So with that, ambulances came, police came, and there was a death to resolve. And pretty immediately, the police thought there was some foul play. So they were like, so what is going on here?
Because, it kind of has to be foul play, no?
Yeah,
she didn't go close the door in a closet, count to 10, and just never come out. I don't think that that's the case.
Well, and here's the other thing. Her purse and her car are missing.
She's a young woman. She's 52?
Yeah.
Okay, so this isn't somebody who's in their, late 90s.
Right.
Where it's
unable
to
drive.
Yeah, she was awake this morning. Now she's not. Oh, no. You know what?
Right.
There are things that are expected and anticipated that are sad, and then there's something tragic and sudden that is,
Yeah. Well, and not something that anybody was expecting. She didn't have any health concerns. She was active. She was intelligent, used her brain and her body every day. She was doing well.
She had plans.
Yeah.
That day. So she never made it to lunch. Is that what we're saying?
Yes. So they listened to the voicemails that were on her machine, and she had one from her friend around 2 being like, hey, I hope you're okay. It's 2:00. And so they deduced from that she probably did not make her lunch plans. But pretty immediately, a few things happened in quick succession. First, police told Andy's 24-year-old son, Kevin. And, let me not put the carriage before the horse here. They kind of told Kevin.
Oh.
They went to Kevin and they were like, hey, we have bad news. Your mom's dead.
Oh.
And he was like, huh? And they were like, yeah, guess how it happened? And he was like, I don't know. And they were like, what do you think happened? And he was like, my mom's dead?
They're like, you get three guesses.
They were literally like, what do you think happened? And he was like, I don't know, a car accident or something? She's in good health. What is going on? And they were like, oh, you know where her car is? And he was like,
yeah.
I don't know. If she died, maybe check by her body? Is happening?
A lot of times investigators will pose a question as, oh, what do you think happened? What do you,
right.
Where do you think she is? To try to see, because if they're like, oh, I don't know, I'd guess maybe the woods, and it's like, right. The body's in the woods, and it's like, oh, and why'd you say that? So that's a very unfortunate way to tell a son that his mother's dead.
Well, and especially too, I guess for me, just tell me, dude.
Mm.
If my mom's dead, don't say, hey, your mom's dead. Guess how?
Yeah.
Like, if I came and I was trying to suss out if he knew anything, I might be like, hey, so do you know what is going on with your mom right now? Like, do you know if she had any plans for today? Like,
yeah.
Try to sort of not make it like, here's trauma. Okay, here's a fun game. How'd it happen?
I know.
And I think that one of the things that we see as sort of a pattern in this case is relatively poor policing. And this isn't the case in all of the murders that we cover. But I think it's important to note where it's happening. And I do believe that the Arlington PD has made some changes based off of this case. But it is really not the best police work that we've seen. This is a stark contrast from Grace Mullane.
Like, yeah.
Very stark. So they said, okay, all right, no. She wasn't in a car accident. Okay, she was found in her bedroom closet. Do you know anything? And Kevin was like, no, why? If you don't know, why are you here asking if I know things? Please go find them out. That is my mom.
Mm-hmm.
And Kevin and his mom were close. I mean, like, super close. And so, I don't know. I feel so much for Kevin that this is the experience he had finding out that she was murdered.
Yeah.
And then, as we'll see in this investigation, it's just so shitty the whole time. Like,
that's so bad.
He has such a hard time seeing this through and going through the investigative process. And like I said, it went cold for 20 years. Like, he had a hell of a time. But eventually, I guess his response was enough that cops were like, okay, clearly you were not involved and you are a grieving son. Which makes sense because they were so close. Andy was so proud of Kevin. Her friends say how proud she was of him, like, all the time. She talked about how smart he was and how witty he was and how handsome he was. And she was just, like, the proudest little mama.
And she only had one child, right?
Yes, just Kevin. And her and Kevin's dad split when Kevin was, like, a young kid. Mm. So for a long time, it was just the two of them after his dad left. Or maybe they left him. I don't know, obviously, all of the situation there. But once it was just Andy and Kevin, Andy went back and she did put herself through that librarian school, which is cool. And she just loved Kevin and watched him grow up into this very well-rounded adult. And, like, what more can you ask as a parent than to see your child happy and healthy?
I think that's all you can ask for.
And grown, right. And so, yes, the divorce was, like, a little bit bitter, but other than that, it was just the two of them. And then years later, she met Chris and they started dating. They were together for 10 years. I don't know how long they were engaged out of that, but mm-hmm. they were engaged at the time of Andy's death. And like I said, Chris was, like, an awesome addition to their duo. He made, like, the perfect trio, you know?
Yeah.
He was calm. He was pretty low-key. He didn't have a lot of loud opinions. It wasn't his way or the highway. He was there to support Andy. He was there for Kevin. And he just really loved their peaceful little life.
Hmm.
He fit in really nice. He really liked Kevin. And the two of them had a good relationship. Again, like I said, Kevin said it was, like, between a stepdad and an older brother. Which, the other thing I learned, which wasn't pointed out in the first few things that I listened to on this case, was that there was a bit of an age gap between Andy and Chris.
Mm-hmm.
Andy was 52, and I think Chris was in his late 30s.
Okay.
And so, like, he's probably pretty equally split between Kevin's age and his mom's age.
Yeah.
But that also kind of makes that dynamic fit even better. You know what I mean? Especially with that age gap, that he didn't come in and start making waves and, like, okay, this yeah. is my house, my rules or whatever. And I don't know. It just seemed so nice. The other thing that Chris and Andy had going on was that they were building a dream house.
Oh.
And by a dream house, I mean, it was a vacation house, but yeah. they were so excited. They put in equal money. They did equal labor on it. Like, it was totally 50-50 theirs, which is cool. So over the years, they'd each put, like, together they put $500 aside a month, so $250 each, that they would just dedicate to this dream vacation home, and they kept building. And it was really cool.
Aww.
And so, I don't know, it's just such a nice, peaceful dynamic. Like, you can look at this and you can see, like, okay, this works.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is sweet. And then pretty quickly after the police told Kevin, they pulled Chris in for questioning. And they found out a bunch of this, as you would. But Chris had 28 hours of on-record interviews in the 3 days following Andy's death.
Wow.
That's a lot.
That's a lot.
And so in these interviews, the police lied to Chris, saying that they knew he did it and that they had evidence, which, by the way, is completely legal. Police are allowed to lie to suspects. Mm-hmm. But they claimed that Chris's fingerprints were on Andy's neck and that the time of death was estimated to be after he got home from work that day.
Fingerprints on her neck is like...
Right. Okay. It's like, that's his partner. Like, his fingerprints are going to be anywhere. Like,
well, not even that, but like, can they even get fingerprints off of a neck? I think you can see like bruise marks of like a hand and determine how big the hand is. But you're not getting a unique fingerprint off of... Come on now.
You probably sweat it off. I would.
They're like, yeah, well... We have this machine where we can read your mind and we know that you're nervous. So
sucker.
We know literally. You did it.
And so Chris, by the end of 3 days, he had almost no sleep, almost no food, and he's freshly grieving his partner of 10 years. And so by the end of it, and we do see this happen, if you guys are curious about more like concrete field research, I guess, and studies on false confessions, you can definitely go look at the confession tapes on Netflix. Those are great. But Chris starts talking to them about anything he can, right? And they're like, okay, so you say you didn't hurt her. And he's like, no, I do not remember hurting her. Like, mm-hmm. I don't think I hurt her. Like, I did not hurt her. And they're like, but we have this evidence. And he's like, yeah, I have no memory of this. And
they're like, well, just because you don't remember doesn't mean you didn't do it.
Literally. No. So that's kind of how this went. And they were like, all right, so can you imagine with me what might have happened if you might have hurt her?
No, I can't, because it didn't happen.
Right. And I mean, he's at this point, like, you know, you're trying to cooperate. You're trying to help because you're like, I think this will help solve things. And it's been 3 days. He's grief stricken. He's sleep deprived. And he's probably hangry. I'd be hangry. I don't know if he was angry about it, but I would be. So he's like, okay, I had like a dream vision, and I guess if I hurt her, like maybe I hit her and she hit like a desk or something. And then they were like, and then you put her in the closet. And he was like, I must have, like, I have no memory of putting her in the closet, but I must have put her in the closet. And so the police immediately zone in on him. Mm-hmm. Like, he is suspect number one to them. And just so you know what I know, they asked, like, hey, what happened that day? Can you recount your day?
Mm-hmm.
He goes, yep, I got home about 5, maybe 6. We were supposed to have a date that night. But when I get home, her car wasn't there and her purse wasn't there. So I thought she might have still been out with like the friend she was with earlier. So I cleaned up a little. I did some dishes. I did the laundry. And I will say, it's a little weird, but he does go into like extreme detail about the laundry. Like, like, he did a load of colors and then he did a load of white, like, you know, just stuff like that, where it's like, okay, that's a little more than most people would normally give, but maybe he's thinking anything helps. Who knows?
Mm.
So he's talking through it, and then he's like, and then she still wasn't home. And well, it was the 90s. So it's not like cell phones were everywhere. They might've had car phones if they could afford it. I don't know. They had cell phones. I just don't think they were everywhere yet.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. Maybe they did, but he wasn't at least able to contact her.
Mm-hmm.
So he just went to bed. He woke up, noticed she still wasn't there around like 1 a.m., saw the door at the closet was weird, found her and called 911. And that's it. That's the story.
If true, that is very upsetting. It's very sad. And that he didn't know that she was already gone. And he's like, we have our date.
Yeah.
Where is she? And then she didn't show. And he's like, all right, maybe she's still out with her friend.
And then what? You just go to bed and hope and wake up and find you're wrong.
Very wrong.
So with that, an investigation took off. This is when Arlington PD decided Chris was their guy. They did not find out he was their guy.
Oh.
And so they brought Kevin in for questioning and they were like, hey, we think it might be Chris. And he was like, I literally don't know why you would think that. There is zero reason that he would hurt my mom. They aren't fighting. There's nothing wrong. They're together. They're building a future. They get along. What the fuck?
And that's pretty telling, too. Because yeah. you know that Kevin is racking his brain trying to think who would do this to his mom.
Right.
And if Chris doesn't come up on the list at all, he's like, no, he would protect her if anything. You yeah. know, like, he's not your guy. Why are you looking at him? And they're like, well, he admitted it. So.
Yeah. And so a few days after the interview that Chris had with them, which they didn't have enough to, like, arrest him or anything, but they definitely were zoned in on Chris. He was driving and he saw Andy's car abandoned on the side of the road. And he called Kevin and he was like, oh my God, I found the car. And he was like, I'm going to call the police right after this, but they're going to think I'm guilty. They already think I'm guilty. And now I'm the one that found the car.
Oh.
But he did. He called them. He told them. He was like, I found it. It was here on the side of the road. I don't see anything, but like just. Here, this is where it is. And so when the police then went back to Kevin, they were like, look, he found the car. What do you think of that? And Kevin was like, I have other pressing things that we need to talk about. And they right. were like, what? Like, do you think somebody else would have hurt your mom? And he goes, check out the computer guy.
Oh.
And they're like, what the fuck is the computer guy?
Yeah.
Also, isn't it weird that Chris found the car? And Kevin was like, what about the fucking computer guy? So they were going to look a little further into it, but they wanted to ask Kevin what they knew or what he knew.
Mm-hmm.
And here's what he said. Not too long before this, maybe a month. Kevin says that one day while Andy was home, she saw a junk removal truck and she ran out because it was still there. And she was like, hey, do you guys take computers? I have a laptop I'm trying to get rid of.
Mm-hmm.
And the truck driver was like, you know, actually, I'm so sorry. We don't take them as a company, but I'm looking for a junk computer. I'd be happy to take it off your hands if you want to get rid of it.
Okay.
And so Andy was like, sure. Oh my gosh, no worries. Follow me. She got him like a little glass of water. She got him the computer and she sent him on his way. And when Kevin first found out about this, he was really annoyed. He was really angry. He was like, that's not safe. Like, you can't just have strangers come into your home. Like, you're getting rid of a computer. Why does he want a junk computer? Like, it's just weird.
That's a conversation I would have if I knew somebody who did that. I'd be like, we don't bring strangers in here.
Not for your trash.
Hells no. And if it's, is it really a junk computer? Like, who needs that, first of right. all? What information was left on it that you didn't wipe?
Right, that okay. he now has.
Okay.
And also, just in general, if it's junk and you're bringing it to someone who's like, I could use a spare part, you bring it out to them.
Yeah.
Out to the stranger mm-hmm. that works for the junk removal company. But okay. And so a few weeks after that, maybe four, maybe three, he calls back. He's like, hey, I'm having some trouble setting it up. And they talked for like a few minutes and that was it.
Hmm.
But still weird, more than I would do for someone I gave my junk computer to. But Andy's just nice like that. So this is the computer guy. At this point, nobody knows his name. I mean,
Andy might have.
Right.
If he gave her a real name.
True. And it's possible Chris might have if he talked to him on the phone, but I kind of doubt it.
Mm-hmm.
So in that interview, obviously the detectives were like, do you know anything else? And Kevin was like, no. And they were like, okay, but still weird that Chris found that car though, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Kevin was, I'm sure he had like an eye twitch at that point. And he was like, oh my fucking God.
He's like, let the car go for a second.
Like 2 seconds. Listen to this weird computer guy. Why'd he call my mom again?
You know when like there's a little kid and they're like hell bent on like asking for a snack or a toy or something. Mm-hmm. You try to distract them with something else. And they're like, okay, but what about the fruit snacks?
Yeah.
And you're like, for Christ's sakes, go watch Looney Tunes.
And they're like, with fruit snacks, though.
Like, and you're like, and where's the fruit snacks?
Yeah. No, it's
like
this, that's this.
It's like this, like.
The tunnel vision.
Yeah, the redirect back.
Constant. And so ultimately, the police didn't have anything to further their case against Chris. Kevin wanted them to look into the computer guy, and eventually they did. And here's what they found out. I can't remember exactly how they found out who the computer guy was. I don't know if they were able to call the junk removal company or just like check with cameras, but it turns out he wasn't a stranger.
Mm.
At least not to law enforcement.
Ooh.
See, the junk removal guy was later identified as Bobby Joe Leonard, who I'm going to call Bobby for the most part.
Bobby.
See, Bobby was no stranger to law enforcement. He was a good friend of law enforcement. And by that, I mean they were well acquainted. Mm. He had a history of criminal record that was longer than a CVS receipt. Okay?
That's too long.
That's too long. The size of a CVS receipt is too long. More than that is definitely too long. And probably most of the reason we have deforestation. Okay.
So long.
So bad. And shortly after this, so we're not quite there yet, but shortly after, he does get put in prison for a life sentence.
Oh.
Okay. In case we're wondering. But Bobby had plenty of history that included assaults. That included sexual assaults of kinds. It also included just the normal kind of aging into crime things that you see, like breaking and entering and larceny and smaller crimes that are still crimes that progress.
Correct.
So he had history. Mm. All right. He had history and chemistry with the Arlington PD. I mean,
you had to throw a dad joke in there.
I needed one.
You couldn't Come resist on. That? Okay.
So. Right around now, which I'm going to call 1999, Bobby gets arrested again.
Bobby, naughty.
You know what Bobby gets arrested for?
What'd he do?
The assault and the attempted murder of a 13-year-old girl.
Oh, God. A baby.
A baby.
And how old's this dude?
20s, 30s. Grown-ass man.
Oh, jeez.
So... yeah, it turns out that he had assaulted this 13-year-old, getting himself on a cute new registry.
Awesome.
The sex offender registry.
Jesus.
And also earning himself a life sentence for the attempted murder of this 13-year-old.
So it must have been a pretty significant attack if...
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And we'll get a little more into it once the trial comes, but that's not like the main point of this.
Mm-hmm.
So just letting you all know, he is in custody. At this point.
Okay. So they figured out they've got his name to go on. And this was just a year later.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And.
Well, they know where to find him.
True. But after that. And they talked with him. And he was like, yeah, I don't know what you're talking about. And they're like, okay, bye.
Like, well, they didn't have. He doesn't really have anything to lose, but.
No. But he also doesn't have anything to gain.
Yep.
So they're like, all right, bye. And they leave. And then the case goes cold.
Mm.
For 20 years.
Ugh.
But before we get to 20 years, we're going to pick up in 15 in the cold, cold case year of 2013.
Okay.
So in 2013, Kevin has been badgering them because he's like, what the fuck happened to my mom?
Poor Kevin.
Seriously. Kevin deserves the biggest hug and like a really warm blanket and a cup of tea, you know, and like a little boop on the nose.
Yeah. A little nose boop.
Yeah. And like probably... restitution from the Arlington PD, but we'll get there. So it was cold, and in 2013 he had finally convinced the cold case unit to open it again. So he was like, come on, not solved, not done. My mom is dead and there's no justice, there's no conclusion, and this did not happen from a random heart attack. We know she was murdered.
How exactly was she murdered?
So they were able to determine that she was murdered by strangulation.
Okay.
Yes. So.
So a very personal, violent, involved.
In your face.
Yeah.
Even as, you know, it's interesting that this came right after Grace Mullane in my research, because as we talked about in that one, it takes more than 10 minutes of sustained force to strangle someone.
Yeah.
And that's pretty intense. It's pretty up close and personal. So
that takes strength and effort and
determination.
You have to mean to do that. You don't accidentally do that, as no. We know from the Grace Mullane case. But
yeah, so definitely not a fluke accident, not something she could do to herself without there being very obvious evidence left behind. Like something is wrong and it's still not solved. And Kevin's banging his fists on the wall. I imagine he's having like a Charlie Day moment in It's Always Sunny with all of like the red string taped up on the wall. And he's like, Carol, Carol, can we talk about my mom's murder? I'd love to talk about my mom's murder. And everyone's like got their ears covered and like their heads in the sand. And poor Kevin just needs someone to be on his side.
He just needs someone to listen because so Chris wasn't arrested, right?
Correct.
I mean, it does truthfully make the most sense for it to be him. Statistically, that's who you look to.
Yeah.
And that phone call,
weird,
to 911, very strange. Incriminating,
but strange,
but accompanied with other evidence to a jury would be pretty damning, I think.
Yeah.
But we know statistically, like, she didn't have enemies.
Nope.
She didn't live a high risk lifestyle where you could trace anything else to her. Like there were nobody that didn't like her,
right?
Nobody that had a vendetta against her. She had a loving son, only one. They had a close relationship, so okay,
positive
and
one.
Then there's Chris, and Chris, from what you've shared, sounds like a really good guy. They had a happy marriage, things were going really well.
Yeah.
And then he's just kind of stunned to find her not alive.
Yeah,
that's it.
And definitely coupled with the interview after that and the police being like, imagine with me, imagine this. And so it's just.
Yeah, you never play along to those.
It's sticky.
If you really didn't do it, it's no, I'm not going to imagine because I didn't do anything. I don't know. You should be finding the real person.
The other thing here is that Chris didn't ask for an attorney.
Hmm.
And I think that a common misconception for a lot of people is that, like, I'm not guilty. I don't need an attorney. But it's always shrewd to have one with you because they can tell you what your rights are. They know that a whole hell of a lot better than most people do.
Mm-hmm.
But also important because they'll tell you when to shut your fucking mouth.
Yes.
Because some things you think are going to help and they're not going to help at all. And some things it's better to bring up front rather than keep them hidden to be found out later.
Yep.
But you know what's best to figure out what those things are? An attorney with legal advice to teach you how to go through this.
Correct.
So,
because that 18 hours of conversation would not have happened.
28.
Oh, God. Okay. Yeah.
It was intense. It was insane.
Wow.
And don't get me wrong, it's not like the police did anything illegal. All of the things they did are perfectly legal. But that, I think, is more call for like amending of laws than it is those specific police officers, you know?
Well, even that being perfectly legal, but him just not either thinking of or knowing
right
what to say to get that. And again, I understand why police think it was him. It does all point to him, but you need more than that.
Yes. It needs to be more than a hunch or statistically probable.
But I mean, they didn't arrest him unlawfully. Like, he was still free to go. Of course, he then found the car.
Yeah.
You know, but he was still, I mean, on his way.
Yeah. And so 15 years later in 2013, when the case was reopened, Kevin also got questioned again.
Mm-hmm.
Which is good. He was probably like, finally, thank you. Here we go.
Yeah.
Question me all you want. And so he was kind of pissed. He was like, okay, we're 20 years past. What have we learned? Is there any new information?
Mm.
And they were like, no. And they were like,
great.
But Chris, though. And Kevin was like, are you fucking kidding me?
Let it go.
Stop with the Chris thing. Yeah. Okay, it's been 20 years. Move on.
Stop trying to make fetch happen. It's not going to happen.
Come on, Gretchen. Come on, Arlington PD. So at this point in time, Kevin's like, stop, let it go. And the police were like, no, we want to show you something.
Mm-hmm.
And Kevin's like, what do you want to show me? And they pull up the video of that 3-day interrogation on the third day when they were like, hey, imagine with us, if you were to hurt her, what would you do? And Chris, in his exhausted, non-eating, grief-stricken state, is like, I don't have any memory of putting her body in a closet.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they play Kevin. And to be fair, it's a pretty damning clip. He is quiet for a long time. The way he words, I don't have a memory of that. Like, it's sus.
Of putting her body in a closet.
Yeah.
Not her. Not. Yeah. Yep,
it's sus. And so Kevin.
I don't love that.
Feels like a switch has flipped in his body and he is full of rage. It's like, are you fucking kidding me? I've been defending this guy for 20 years saying he didn't murder my mom and he probably murdered my mom.
Oh.
And he is so angry, but he works with the police. And the police are like, okay, so here's what we're going to do. We want to try a few different things. But first, let's see if he'll tell you. Like, he might. It's been 20 years. The case went cold. Might have thought he got away with it. And so Kevin was like, oh, okay. Good move. So he goes to a lunch date with Chris. And it's been a while. You know, in the years since, like, Kevin has really stuck with it. He took up running. But other than that, like, the only thing that has changed is probably that. The rest of his life is like a time loop from when he's 24, because his life is go to work, try to figure out what happened to mom. Go to work, try to figure out what happened to mom.
Aww.
And so he's really been stuck in this.
Poor guys. It's been 15 years of just
that.
Ugh.
And Chris, he was there for a while. He was there maybe 4 or 5 years doing the same thing. And eventually he decided to try to move forward. Because honestly, what else was there to do?
Yeah.
And so Chris did end up getting involved with someone else. I don't know if they were engaged or not, but I think they had moved in together, at least by this time, which, again, that's 15 years. Like, that's a decent chunk of time.
Yeah.
And so Chris was trying to move forward, and Kevin was trying to figure it out still. He was stuck there. So Kevin calls Chris and is like, hey, I want to go out for lunch. I haven't seen you in forever. Let's chat. Let's see what's up. And they go on this date. And you can actually hear the audio recording. I heard it on the Dateline podcast for this. But, like, you can hear it all. It's so funny. I like when there's, like, professional recordings that are very obviously not professional recordings. Like, they're recordings used for professional purposes. But, like, it's an Apple iPhone, like,
right,
earbud mic under your shirt kind of thing.
Yeah.
So it's definitely like that. But at first Kevin's like, hey, you know, the 20-year anniversary of my mom's death is coming up kind of soon, like in a few years, and I was thinking of doing something like maybe a remembrance or whatever, but I wanted to get your take on it.
Mm-hmm.
And Chris is like, yeah, no, I think that's actually really sweet. Like, I think that would be a great idea. And the case was reopened in 2013, but I don't think they really started making progress until maybe 2016, 2017. So, like, it was coming up closer than it was just like, hey, the 15-year just passed.
Right.
And so they were just talking about it. And eventually Kevin gets to asking. He's like, what do you remember about that day? Like, do you remember anything?
Mm.
And essentially, the one hiccup that this gets caught on is that in the 911 call, or I guess in the days immediately preceding finding Andy's body, Chris had said he noticed that the apartment was vacuumed.
Mm-hmm.
So it looked like someone had come in and cleaned up. But he didn't vacuum. And then now, 17, 18 years later, when he's talking with Kevin, he says something like, maybe I vacuumed. And so Kevin now, suspicious of Chris, pissed that he's been defending him for 20 years and feeling like he caught him in a lie, calls him on it.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, what the fuck, guy? Like, why are you lying to my face? Like, you come into my life, you fall in love with my mom, she falls in love with you, you join our family, and then you murder her. And then you act like you don't know for 20 years. And now you're sitting here telling me that you do. And Chris is like, bro, we were just having tomato soup. Like, what the fuck is happening? He's like, I did not hurt your mom. I don't know why you think I hurt your mom. I'm sorry. But what the fuck?
Yeah.
And so he doesn't get anywhere with that, which kind of makes sense to me. I feel like if you are, and this is in no way a criticism of Kevin. In fact, I think this is a good quality of his, but I think if you're that emotionally invested in this, you might not be the best person to try to do a sting operation.
Yeah.
It just seems like something that could be easily triggered, which obviously it was here. And that's just not always the best investigative work that you can do. Not that Kevin's an investigator.
Right.
But I'm just saying. So during that time, police did go back to Bobby Joe Leonard.
Okay.
And now, of course, he's serving his life sentence. He's incarcerated. So they like buddy up with him at the prison. And they're like, hey.
We'll give you like one thing of ramen.
Do you remember? Like almost 20 years ago. We asked you if you like murdered this lady. And he was like, yeah, I remember that. And they were like, okay, well, did you?
And he's like, I said no before. I must say no again.
And he said, you know what? This birdie has changed its tune.
No way.
I did murder her.
What?
I murdered her horde. And he tells them all. He tells them all of the detail. He's like, yep, I came back after the laptop thing. And she invited me in and she went to get me a glass of water. And when she came back, I strangled her.
I'm sorry, why?
And they were like, fucking why? And he was like, oh, okay, yeah, no, I see how this looks weird. No, I was hired to do it.
What?
Yes, literally. And they were like, no, for sure. I got a phone call from a man from the phone that she has, and he said that he would pay me $5,000 to get rid of her or to take care of her.
What?
And the police were like, okay, how did you know that take care of her meant to kill her?
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, oh, the guy on the phone said that I shouldn't use a gun because it would be too messy. And that's how I knew he meant to kill her.
I'm so- Come on.
Yeah. No, I'm not kidding. This is what happened.
Okay.
And the police are like, all right, why did you do it? And he's like, well, he promised me $5,000. He said it'd be in a pair of shoes in the closet.
What?
So he comes back to this house. He strangles Andy. Puts her in the closet and then searches everywhere for the $5,000.
And there's no $5,000.
No $5,000.
Shocker.
So, there's none there. And then he was like, you know what? I'm pissed. I wanted my $5,000, but there was none there. So I just took a jar of coins and most of Andy's purse collection, which were missing. So checks.
I can't.
Mm-hmm.
I have so many things.
So now they're saying that Chris hired him. Because it came from that same phone number.
Oh, snap.
And they're like, you must have been really pissed. Like, you got shortchanged $5,000. Like, why didn't you do anything about that? And Bobby was like, oh, I would have. I just got arrested and put in prison for this first.
So this guy is saying that he received a phone call from her house.
Yes.
Saying to kill her.
Yep.
Okay, so then it was Chris.
And then...
Fuck him.
He gets there and there's no money and he's pissed. And the police are like, yeah, so why didn't you go after him for your money? And he was like, I got convicted of the assault and attempted murder. And now I'm in here for my life.
That's why I'm here.
And they're like, okay, sick. So you'll testify. And he was like, yeah, I'll testify. No problem. I got nowhere else to be.
Oh, no.
Like what? The gym? Come on. You can miss a day.
Yeah.
You got the rest of your life. You can bulk up. It's fine.
Oh, no.
Well, okay. Bobby and Chris had never actually met. He just kind of assumed it was Chris because of a bunch of different factors. Like, it was from the same phone number. It was from the house. He had called and said to come on that day because she'd be off of work, which they figured only people who knew her would know.
Right.
Because she worked all the time and it wasn't frequent.
Yeah, her plan to... it was the friend. Sorry.
With a little voice changer.
Yeah.
But.
You say that? Wait till we cover my case next week. Ooh, snap. Anyway.
I can't wait. So later on, obviously, police still tried to find evidence that connected Chris. Because right now they didn't have anything to say it was Chris. And what they did was they tried to run another sting operation. And to be fair, this one seemed better planned than the last one.
Anything was better than that, but truly. Okay.
And so they send out a police undercover and
a single police, one police.
One police. They send out a policeman later who they dressed up undercover as one of Bobby Joe Leonard's family members.
Okay.
And they had him go up to Chris and be like, yo, my cousin says that you owe him money. And we need help. And he said that you'd give it to us. Where's the money? And Chris's response, to be fair, is open to interpretation. But he said, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't owe him anything.
Okay.
Yeah. And so the guy, they have like a little bit of a conversation. This is also recorded. You can get your hands on it. It's not that hard. But they have this communication. They have this talk. And eventually, and now this is where I get sus of Chris, mm-hmm. because he jumps pretty quickly from like, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't owe him anything, to like, is this a threat? Like, are you threatening me right now if I don't pay you whatever money you're talking about?
I don't see how that's suspicious.
And maybe this is just a difference in how we handle conflict. I am not as easygoing as it seems Chris is. He seems exceptionally easygoing. Mm-hmm. For me, I would be like, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about or who the fuck you think I owe money to, but I'm pretty sure you have the wrong fucking person. If you're coming up around me telling me that I owe someone money that you're collecting, sir. And like, they never explicitly say it's $5,000 or whatever, but they're like, yeah, we know you owe a significant amount of money because he wouldn't send us out here if he didn't. And so I guess I could see where I'd be like, he sent you out there. Like, what are you trying to do?
Right.
But my first reaction would not be like, you're trying to threaten me.
Yeah, but he could just be freaked out. I don't know. I kind of give him a pass on that one.
So I will say Chris genuinely seemed scared. He called his attorney right after the guy left.
Oh, he finally got one of those, didn't
he? Yeah, he did. Oh, okay. He did. And his attorney was like, dude, there's like no way that's not a police operation. That's got to be the police. Come on. Oh. And Chris was like, yeah, but I'm kind of stressed that it like actually is a family member.
Oh.
And the attorney was like, yeah, dude, I think you're fine. Like, pretty sure that's the police. And so they keep going. But here's the thing. There's no motive. There's no motive anywhere.
Mm-hmm. For anybody.
And it doesn't make sense because the only motive we would need would be Chris's. Because either he did it or he hired Bobby Joe Leonard to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But why would you hire him to do it if you have no motive? Bobby's motive would be $5,000. That makes sense to me.
Yeah.
But not Chris. And so, I mean, the only thing, literally the only thing that came up out of the last 15 years that could have potentially been a problem with Chris and Andy was that Chris sometimes watched online porn. I'm not kidding. That's it. That's what came out as like the secret that he had was sometimes he'd pay for porn.
That's it?
Yep.
Okay.
And well, so the wild ass speculations that come out of this is that they're like, well, maybe that came up and that was an issue. And then maybe it would have been seen as infidelity and maybe they would have broken up and he didn't want to give up half of the dream house. And it's like, okay, a little leapfrog. What about not jumping to conclusions? Like the man watched porn.
Yeah, that's reaching.
It's a stretch, even for me. Even for Simone fucking Biles, that's a stretch, okay? Like,
love her. Anyway.
I know. It's not to say that it's impossible. It's just to say it's pretty improbable if that's the only thing you have and everything else seems happy and healthy. But what do I know? So you don't need a motive to go to court. So they did. They took it to court.
Really?
Okay. Yep. So.
So they took it to trial?
Yes, they did. They arrested both Bob and Chris. I mean, Bob was already in custody, so like there wasn't a lot different for him. But they did arrest Chris. And come 2021, they finally got to the trial. So court didn't happen until 2021, which was 23 years after Andrea's death. There was a jury and both Bobby and Chris stood before them, as you do.
So they were kind of co-defendants in
kind of
this trial. Okay.
Yes. I do believe that later on it got separated like for sentencing. But at present, yes.
Okay.
And so There was a lot of testimony. There were a lot of different arguments. The jury heard about Chris's strange 911 call, the weirder interview, and shady behavior and dodgy nature when approached by quote-unquote Bobby's relatives, which weren't really, obviously. But they also heard how Bobby entered the home, how he got in well with a woman who did nothing but good things to him, and how he explicitly said he strangled her to death.
Yeah. And he said he took the bags, which he could describe.
Yep.
I mean, they were missing. Who else would have known that?
Yeah, and he did. He brought up other information that only the police knew at that point. So they knew that he was involved. Mm-hmm. Like, there was no question about that.
But it's who called him.
But it's who called him.
Right.
And so what I think is interesting to note here is that the jury, like me and hopefully you, are asking why.
Mm-hmm.
The jury's like, we don't get it. There's zero motive. Prosecution said that, again, maybe the porn came up and there was a fight. And Chris didn't want to lose half of all of the things that he'd been doing for the last 10 years. And defense said, there's zero proof that this call ever happened.
Yep.
And we have another little fun piece of information for you.
Oh, snap.
And the jury was like, what? They were like the surprise Pikachu face.
Got it.
And the defense said, So the man who's testifying right now for a lenient sentence, the man who's in prison for, that's right, the rape and attempted murder of the 13-year-old. How did he attempt to murder her again? Oh, he strangled her? Oh, okay. And where did he leave the 13-year-old's body again? Oh, in a closet? Okay. And last question here, just really quick. So we saw the interview, the questioning with Bobby while he was in custody. Does it change anyone's mind that it was the detective first who brought up murder for hire and said that Bobby might get a lenient sentence if that was the case? Does that bother anyone else? And the jury was like, huh.
Now that you mention it,
yeah,
that does matter.
Yep. That bothers me.
Mm.
Uh-huh. And so it took the jury less than an hour to deliberate, come back.
Mm.
And
they're like, actually, you know what? Consider me bothered.
Yep. I will check that box.
He is guilty.
It took them less than an hour to come back and find Bobby Joe Leonard guilty of first degree murder. And they acquitted Chris.
Wow.
Yeah.
So it literally wasn't a murder for hire.
No, it was literally just this fucking guy who had already done the same thing, assaulted a woman, strangled her, and put her in a closet. Now for the second time.
Oh.
And was in prison. And the detective was like, yeah, so we might get you like a lenient sentence if it was like murder for hire. Like, you can tell us. And he was like,
why would
okay.
It even.
In that case. Yeah.
But why would it even matter to him? Because if he's already doing life, life is life, man. You want life or life and life?
I mean, I'm not saying he's smart.
Damn.
What was funny to me, like my favorite defense argument was like, why does this man need $5,000 to try to kill someone? He did it before for free.
He said, I know my worth.
I know. He said, I won't be making that mistake again. Thank you.
Damn it.
Yeah.
Also, and this shouldn't matter, but $5,000, that's it.
That I know.
And but seriously though, we're going to assume that that's the cost of someone's life, and I know that it's been done for less, as stupid as that sounds, but like, you're taking a life.
Yeah.
And or at the very least, you don't care about life. Okay, sure. But you are risking getting arrested and being incarcerated for the rest of your life, or, you know, given the death penalty, so your life is on the line.
Yep.
So
and that's $5,000 to you.
That better be worth it for the reward here.
Yep. And I don't even think like $50,000 to $75,000 feels too small. That's a year's salary.
So there was no sexual component to Andy's murder.
Not that we know of. I think he just got an itch.
And she just was going to give him a free computer.
Yep. and go swimming and hang out in her little dream house and read her books.
So he comes over, he gets this laptop, she gives it to him, and he leaves.
Mm-hmm.
Later on, he calls her up and says, I had issues with it.
Yeah, just and, like setting it up.
And he comes back over the house.
Yeah.
And this is when this happened.
Seemingly.
I hate everything about that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So stupid.
So stupid.
So, for what? For what?
Nothing.
For what? She had to die? Like, for what? I'm well, so mad. Abby, I'm so mad.
I didn't do it.
She just seems like a sweet woman she who is happy, and her son was a well-adjusted, happy man, and everything was starting to go well, and she was putting away money for her rocking chair time,
mm-hmm.
and was probably looking toward retirement less than, you know, behind her, and that all that shit. Come on, man.
Yeah. And so, listen, you can rest easy. Because Bobby Joe Leonard was given another life sentence.
Big whoop. He still tried to bring Chris. See, Chris, I
to,
knew.
to be served consecutively. So, if Bobby.
Hells yeah.
Dies of a heart attack, flatlines, and gets shocked back, he got a whole nother life of sentence. So, don't worry about it.
Good.
As far as Chris, I do just want to talk a little bit about the aftermath here. To my knowledge, this is still going, so I don't have any conclusions or results for all of you, but Chris is filing a civil suit, I believe against Arlington PD, but also potentially against one of the detectives for lying on the stand. I'm not entirely sure where that's at.
Oh, shit. If he lied on the stand, he's going to get in trouble in court anyway.
Yep. So that's all alleged, but that is what's happening there. I hope he's doing okay. But I also completely understand the anger and the bitterness and resentment that I'm sure I would have if my fiance and partner of 10 years died and then people blamed me for 20 years.
Yeah, that's a significant part of your life that has been overshadowed and like that glooming just cloud over all of those years where not only you're grieving the woman that you were going to marry, but now you're under this microscope for something that he didn't do.
No. Nope.
But at the same time, I can understand that 911 call being weird. Oh. And if that's what you're basing, like your immediate gut reaction is this sounds wrong, this sounds weird. I can see why those around would say,
we need to look at this.
Look into that. Who's the most likely to do this? Who was the only other person in the house? Who was the person who found her? Who found her car? Who didn't really buck at how do you think she died? What would you do? You know, like all of these things, I can see that it points you in the right direction, but I don't think you've got enough to go to trial for that.
No. And frankly, I think for me, the frustration comes especially it's twofold. So the first is after that long interrogation where they get him to talk about a vision where he might imagine hurting her.
Mm-hmm.
The way that he says that is inconsistent with the cause of death. He's like, I guess I might have hit her and she might have hit something. Well, she's strangled.
Yeah.
So that's already inconsistent. The second thing that pisses me off is like, you have a guy here who you talked to, who then got sentenced to life for doing the same thing plus to a 13-year-old. And you don't bat an eye. There's no like, let's revisit that real quick now that we have seen that.
Yeah, no.
So I can totally imagine that. And I hope he's able to sort of move forward with his life and put the turmoil of all of this behind him. Although I know that it's not like he will ever put Andy out of his head. I mean, even Chris's friends now, like there have been a few that talked at least on some of the Dateline stuff have made comments in different articles and they say that like they knew he had a fiance who had passed, but they didn't know more than that. They just knew that every time it came up, Chris would get so sad that he would not be okay for a few days, like if it came up. So I know that Chris cares really, really deeply still for Andy.
Yeah.
And I hope that he's able to sort of move forward with some peace. As far as Kevin, at the trial, he made some really intense remarks during his victim impact statement.
Because he believed Chris was guilty?
Nope. No, at that point, he was like, I hear you. Like, I've heard everything you've said.
Wow. But
essentially, it was just sort of talking about how this murder ruined his life. He lost as much time trying to figure it out as he had with his mom.
Aww.
You know, this was 23 years until the trial happened. He was 24 when she died.
That's very sad.
And
I didn't even think of it like that.
He says that it was extra difficult because he couldn't move on from it. He said to move on, he would have had to grieve, and you can't grieve what happened if you don't know what happened.
Hmm.
And so that has been his pursuit for 2.5 decades. He makes no promises or fortunes of forgiveness. He says that's not on his mind, but he was glad that they could have a day for his mom because it was really all about Andy, and it took 24 years to get there. The quote that stuck with me the most from him was that he said, "Make no mistake, justice delayed is justice denied. This was a breathtaking lack of competence."
Wow.
Kevin said later in the Dateline episode that if what he's remembered for was his tenacity and willingness to stick out the investigation and to be a champion for his mom, to bring light and the truth of her final moments out, that he would be content with that. He'd be happy if that's all he was known for. And I think that legacy is more than cemented.
Yeah.
I hope my personal hopes for Kevin would include a way to move forward with peace. You know, still honoring and processing the traumatic way that his mother was taken from him. But to know that if that's the legacy he wants, that's written. That's done.
That's in stone now.
He's secured that.
Yep.
But now he can also flip the page and move to the next chapter and find out what Kevin now wants.
Now that he can put that behind him, yeah.
Yeah. So that was the tragic murder of Andrea Sincotta and her fucking superhero son who stuck out 24 years of cold case to see it through.
Wow, that's pretty incredible.
Right?
Oh, I have so many frustrating thoughts.
Yep. No, this is one of those that, like, every step of the investigation, I wanted to pull out a new patch of my hair.
But it's frustrating because, to me, it just doesn't seem like the real killer had any real motive to do it or motive to lie about doing it, because you are already caught, man. You were already doing life. Like, you weren't coming out.
I'm also curious if he thought that leniency in sentencing might have been retroactive. Like, if he thought he might
get out.
Then
he's a dumb bitch, is what that means.
Yeah, well, obviously.
Well, yeah, but I just had to, it just needs to be said, okay?
Okay, no, you're right. You're right. That's valid, and I respect it, and it's true.
Thanks.
But I don't think that we're talking about, like, the sharpest tool in the shed.
No.
We're not talking about, like,
the brightest color in the crayon box.
Correct.
Not the sharpest knife in the drawer.
Yes, exactly. That elevator doesn't quite go to the top floor. You know? The light's on. Nobody's home.
Mm-hmm.
A few cards short of 52.
A few fries short of a Happy Meal?
Precisely.
I'd say he's as sharp as a marble.
You're so right for that. Not the brightest bulb on the Christmas tree.
Perhaps he's depriving some village of its idiot.
He's about as sharp as a sack of wet mice. Sorry, that one was from Reddit.
Oh, no. Oh, well, thank you for covering that case.
Yes, I'm glad to at least be able to share, if nothing else, a remarkable tale of a son who loves his mother more than anything.
Yep.
And a very tragic, needless murder. For, like, not even $5,000. For free 99.
For absolutely nothing, for no reason, for a woman that was nice to you. I just...
Yep. Ugh. Yeah.
That's it. I'm not being nice to anybody ever.
Yeah. Please don't invite random strangers into your home to give them junk computers. Bring your computer out to them.
But, right? I mean, with every case we cover, we try to think of something we could learn.
Something,
a mistake that
anything.
We also could have made a judgment that we wouldn't have recognized. I mean, there's all of these things. Yeah. I mean, there's literally danger potentially behind every corner. It's how we do this. So
anytime you call 911, be freaked out, I guess.
It's just, you should be able to. Doesn't mean you can. Doesn't mean you'll be able, that you will be able to, but you should, we should be able to have our friggin' neighbor over, or somebody, oh, did you want to stop in? Do the polite thing. I mean, that southern hospitality. Can I get you some water? You just, you know, take
you
a
want
seat.
Anything to drink?
You're good. I'll be right back. And the fact that that couldn't happen here, and for no reason, is just, it's very upsetting. So
it's so sad. If you wanted to see all of the people, the places, the things that we are talking about today, you could do so at our Instagram. But if you wanted to find that, you'd have to open up your little Instagram app, go to the search bubble and type at About Time for True Crime Pod with periods in between every word. So that is ABOUT period TIME period FOR period TRUE period CRIME period POD because podcast was too long. But if you wanted to send us something a little bit too long for Instagram, you could do that to our email. Allie, where would they send that?
If you wanted to email us, you would send an email to abouttime4tc@gmail.com. So that's ABOUTTIME, numeric 4, tc@gmail.com. That's for your pod pets. You want to say hi. This is your case recommendations. This is anything you want to send us, send it.
Hell yeah.
And we'll get back to you.
And again, just a reminder, if you send us anything on Instagram, if you send us a recommendation and you want to be given like a little shout out, or you specifically don't want to be, just make sure you let us know. We got you.
We got you, baby.
But that's really all I had today. I'm excited for next week to hear whatever your Darth Vader tale is.
Oh, you just wait.
And if I look at my clock, that was
About Time for True Crime.
Bye.